Back in 2017, New York policymakers increased the age of criminal responsibility, creating new pathways for handling certain criminal charges against 16 and 17-year-old defendants. The Raise the Age initiative was also designed to ensure youthful offenders of nonviolent crimes would receive age-appropriate housing and programming to reduce the possibility of reoffending. The implementation of this ambitious law has been bumpy, to say the least, evoking different criticisms from across the political spectrum, ranging from concerns about cases being diverted to family court, as well as inadequate juvenile services and supports. To weigh in on the law and its implementation, we're joined on the Capitol Press Room by Allison Lake, Executive Director of the Westchester Children's Association. Welcome back to the show, Allison.
Thank you so much.
And we're also going to hear from Julia Davis, Director of Youth Justice and Child Welfare for the Children's Defense Fund New York. Welcome back to the program, Julia.
Thank you so much.
So at its core, what was the failing or failings of New York's criminal justice system that the Raise the Age initiative was designed to address?
Both of us have been at this for a long time. And New York, if we think back, was one of the last two states in the country that raised the age of criminal responsibility for young people, so that 16 and 17-year-olds are now treated as the young people they are, as opposed to automatically in the adult system. Many partners, including, you know, Children's Defense Fund and WCA around the state, worked really hard to get that piece of legislation passed so that we would really treat children and kids as the children and kids that they are, while at the same time certainly holding them responsible for their actions.
So it's my understanding that at the time and to this day, there is this youthful offender distinction, and there's the element of the state court system that is designed to handle criminal cases, but has sort of a youth arm to it. Why was that inadequate?
Well, before Raise the Age was passed, all 16 and 17-year-olds, regardless of the offense, were prosecuted in the adult system. And just as Allison said, that made New York an outlier in terms of the way that we operate nationally, but also was really bad for young people and really bad for public safety. The evidence shows that when you put children and adolescents into the adult system, the outcomes tend to be very poor. Children tend to have more contact with the system and are more likely to enter the adult system as adults. So the move with Raise the Age, which is bifurcated, it has sort of two lanes for 16 and 17-year-olds, was meant to remedy that, to really bring most children under the age of 18 into the family court system, where services could be provided, where children didn't face the threat of a permanent criminal conviction, which we've seen in New York in public discussion and discourse over Clean Slate and other laws, gets in the way of kids and adults' ability to work, to go to school, and find housing. And so under Raise the Age, what we have is a system that moves almost all children, 16 and 17-year-olds, into the family court system. And they are prosecuted there if they are prosecuted as juvenile delinquents. And what we've seen since implementation has gone into effect over the last 5 years is about 80% of arrests of 16 and 17-year-olds are put into the family court system. In the family court system, kids can still be subject to detention. They can still be subject to adjudication and placement after adjudication. They can have supervision by probation, services, programming. And just as Allison discussed, it can be a very intensive experience. For some cases of 16 and 17-year-olds, where the charges include display of a deadly weapon, where there is a sex offense alleged, or where there is significant physical injury, those cases will remain in what is known as the youth part of essentially the adult criminal system. And then there are extraordinary circumstances where the prosecutor can try to show that a case belongs in the youth part. And in the youth part, those 16 to 17-year-olds are subject to adult sentencing. And that system remains, you know, part of the law today.
Well, Julia, the threshold that you just outlined has been critiqued by some prosecutors as well as law enforcement as being too high of a burden for actually keeping cases in adult court, arguing that a lot of cases are ending up in family court because of the way this test was written. So, for example, you have to display a gun as opposed to just having a gun, and you need to be the direct cause of, say, significant physical injury. And the idea of extraordinary circumstances isn't necessarily defined by the legislature. So do you think there is room to address those critiques, or do you feel like those concerns are misguided?
Well, I think they are misguided in the sense that they ignore the fact that the family court system really is the appropriate system for 16 and 17 year olds. And as I described earlier, the conditions of a case proceeding there is really not a slap on the wrist. And so I think often prosecutors, and perhaps it's because they're just not exposed to the family court process, or they don't know about the types of services, programs, and frankly, consequences that flow from a delinquency proceeding, they underestimate, frankly, the impact that that can have on young people's lives. And I think they overestimate the effectiveness of adult prosecution in terms of public safety. I mean, keeping kids in the adult court system, if we really believed that that was an appropriate process, good for kids and good for public safety, New York would be much safer prior to implementation of this law. And that's just not the case. In the 1990s and early 2000s, crime was much higher across New York State when we chose the path that prosecutors are suggesting, which is we prosecute 16 and 17-year-olds as adults. And if you look at arrests as an indicator of community safety, what we've seen since the law has been implemented and over the last 10 years is that arrests of juveniles are down about 70%. And when you just look at serious offenses, including violent crime, that's about 60%. And in your hometown in Albany, that the arrest rates for serious and violent offenses among juveniles are down 56%. So I quarrel with the argument about why we believe the adult system is better, because the evidence really shows us it's not.
And if I could just jump in too, Julia, to add, you know, the numbers, and I appreciate you for sharing that data, because I think as we were fighting for this piece of legislation, we knew that those really serious and more violent, right, offenses are such a small number compared to what young people, 16 and 17, you know, what their involvement usually is in the justice system. And, you know, looking at, and I know that both of you have heard this in terms of what the brain science tells us, it's just the type of actions and activities that 16 and 17 year olds are involved in, as that, you know, prefrontal cortex is developing, are not the majority of times these serious cases. And so I think things can also get overblown in terms of the amount of cases or the amount, as you said, of arrest and what's really happening in our community. You know, we had an event recently in Westchester, a panel on Raise the Age 5+ years later. We've had information from our Department of Probation, which has really said that, you know, they see an accomplishment of Raise the Age and almost 90% of cases being removed from the county court are then handled under the family court as JD cases, and many are handled by the Department of Probation. And of those, they say that, you know, they've had a really like 90% success rate of keeping those cases from further court involvement. So we have to ask ourselves, what are we in the business of? If we really are in the business of trying to help young people change their trajectory and move on with their life, it really is in family court, in community-based supports that allow them to do that.
Well, I want to follow up on what Julia referenced regarding some of the data from Albany County, because the Times Union, who's been following this issue more than most outlets, has noted that some data indicates that the number of teenagers younger than 18 who are accused of violent offenses or illegal gun possession have actually increased sharply since the law was changed. And that surge in Albany County, where since 2018, nearly 60% of the cases involve adolescents and juvenile offenders are violent offenses, and nearly half of those involve guns. And that picture, that landscape, seems to run a little contrary to what Julia was talking about. So I'm curious whether you think there is need for more data when it comes to the implementation and the outcomes of Raise the Age. I remember in 2019, there was a report from the state and then a follow-up in 2020. But generally speaking, do we know enough about how this is going?
It's a great question. And, you know, I think the data that we look at is state data on arrests, where we're able to look at juvenile arrests. There's also some information about, you know, adjudications and sentencing. And I think we would benefit much more from information at a community level about what's working, what types of services and programming deficits we have in communities. And on the issue of guns, which is, you know, something that we all need to be thinking about and talking about, the evidence is really pretty clear that when we use a public health approach, when we look at violence interruption, when we look at cure violence programs, credible messenger programs, those are really the most effective way to stop kids from carrying guns. And the research I think that we really need is an inquiry that's really county by county and community by community, especially in the communities where we're seeing the highest levels of arrests and the most number of teenage sentencing. Let's really spend some time looking there, because I think Raise the Age was more than just a change to the statute. It was really, as you said in the beginning, about programming and supports for young people. Very little of the money that we've set aside for Raise the Age has actually reached communities over the last 5 years.
And after a quick break, we'll continue our discussion on the implementation of New York's Raise the Age law.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by Resorts World New York. With over 1 million square feet of space to play, relax, and celebrate, Resorts World New York City hosts more than 5 million visitors a year. That makes Resorts World a significant social and economic partner for local businesses and residents alike. Through its operations and outreach programs, Resorts World has generated more than $4 billion for the state educational system and 1,400 jobs for the people of Queens. More information at rwnewyork.com.
For listeners just joining us, we're continuing our conversation about the state's Raise the Age initiative, which raised the age of criminal responsibility in New York. And our guests are Allison Lake, Executive Director of the Westchester Children's Association, and Julia Davis, Director of Youth Justice and Child Welfare for the Children's Defense Fund, New York. Well, let's turn to another part of this conversation, and this is the idea that the youth population at the state's juvenile centers has dramatically increased following Raise the Age, with an audit by the comptroller finding that the surge in population has coincided with problems at these facilities, including assaults, employee misconduct, and delayed access to certain screening services. So do we have enough facilities to cater to 16 and 17-year-olds who are no longer permitted to be part of that adult population at correction facilities?
Well, I'm so glad you raised this issue about sort of interpreting the audit findings on the populations. First of all, we expected that the number of kids in juvenile placement facilities, which are these facilities for adjudicated kids in New York State, would go up when we stopped the process of putting 16 and 17-year-olds into DOCS prisons. And so those numbers are something that I think everyone that's been in this work certainly knew was coming. What it tells us and what the audit is showing is a couple of different things. One is it really points to the challenges that the system has had in terms of providing services to those kids, assessments, finding out what they need, and then having the staffing to actually provide that. Because we know when kids are in these facilities, if we don't have the staffing there, they're not going to get what they need. But I think it's something that the audit missed that I think is really important to the conversation is that New York State spends more money per kid in these youth prisons than anyone else in the country. It was estimated in 2020 that we spend $900,000 per year to incarcerate children in OCFS placement facilities. And I think the real challenge for us, because we know that, you know, even the quote unquote safest facilities are not good for kids. The real challenge for us is how do we mitigate some of the challenges and harms that are going on in these facilities, but build much more robust services in communities so we can get many more of those kids home.
Also, the young people that find themselves in placement just have more complex lives and you know, trauma in their lives. And I think the mental health of those young people has certainly risen to the top. And then you add the COVID pandemic on top of that. And so then the needs of young people that find themselves in placement, I think over time has just become more complex as well.
The other piece that's worth focusing on is, you know, where are kids coming from and ending up in these OCFS facilities that are the subject of the audit? And it's really important to look at the geography here, because the top four parts of the state that are really driving the incarceration of adolescents is New York City, Monroe County and Rochester, Suffolk County on Long Island, and Erie, you know, Buffalo. Monroe County has, I think, something like 1 million people in it. We have 8 million in New York City, but Monroe is placing the same number of kids, 57 kids in 2022, into these placement facilities. So when you combine this inquiry that really looks geographically, what is driving this? And we think about the resources at stake, as I said, $900,000 per kid per year. I think we really need to be devoting some more attention to the types of investments in alternatives to placement and the services to what we call step down or bring more kids home, and working with judges and stakeholders in those geographies. You know, we're talking about, I think in 2022, something around 400 kids in these facilities, and we can do much better by those kids. You know, working locally, talking with judges, stakeholders, community-based programs, lawyers, and families to use these resources in a better way. Doesn't mean we don't need to fix what's broken in these facilities. We do, and there's an urgency around that. But we also need to be much smarter and be thinking better about the places these kids come from and, you know, the deficits in terms of the types of supports and programs that they need to thrive.
One of the narratives that we've heard since the implementation of Raise the Age is that state dollars aren't actually being spent. Is that a significant problem?
I think absolutely. I mean, part of the legislation and having the budget was so that counties could implement the programs and provide the services and resources that their young people need. And so to have this sort of discrepancy throughout the state on, you know, what counties have used and what they have drawn down and then been able to provide to the children and youth in their communities is a big part of the issue as well, and something that I think certainly needs to be monitored and understood where these dollars are going. One of the pieces that the advocates around the state are hoping in this budget is to have a youth innovation fund that would use 50 million of this allocated annual money that would go directly to community-based organizations and services. I can speak from Westchester County, where our county of probation has over the years drawn down funds and implemented programs and services, certainly. But what we are hearing also from smaller community-based organizations that really have their ears and their hands on the young people in their community, they have innovation and ideas and services that also could support these young people, and think it would really behoove all of us to give them a piece of this funding to do just that.
If there isn't additional funding, if the status quo is maintained, what does that mean for Raise the Age? Is it a success just where we are now, or is it a failure based on the whole picture added up together?
I think Raise the Age has certainly been a success so far. I think there's no question about that. And I think, you know, the information that we have about arrest data and reductions in crime among young people, children, is a clear indicator of that. I think the better question is, have we met the full promise of Raise the Age? And I don't think we have yet. We have appropriated over $1 billion when we look at, you know, the last 5 years. But Based on a public records request we submitted to the Department of Budget, less than half of that has gotten out the door. And New York City, which represents half of the system, has never gotten any state dollars. And so we are now in a position where I think to really go live out the full purpose of the law and also to address concerns around public safety means that we actually have to move the money that we promised into the things that work. That means this Youth Justice Innovation Fund so that we can resource counties and make sure they have what they need, but also get the money into the groups that really have the closest connection to kids, know the most about who's holding guns in the neighborhood or who really needs extra support or care. That's where this next piece needs to go. And, you know, both of the One House bills brought forward by the legislature have elements of the Youth Justice Innovation Fund in it. This isn't new money. This is really just taking a chunk of the appropriation that we make every year more flexible and more effective.
I think overall, Raise the Age has been a success. Like any piece of legislation that is really changing culture takes time, and there continues to be challenges sort of along that timeline. But overall, people are understanding that it is about collaboration, which is one of the things that a judge on our panel said. That Raise the Age, in one word, is about collaboration, and certainly community-based organizations are key to that ongoing success.
Well, unfortunately, we're going to have to leave our Raise the Age conversation there. We've been speaking with Allison Lake. She is the executive director of the Westchester Children's Association. Allison, thanks for making the time.
Thank you for having me.
And we've also been hearing from Julia Davis, director of Youth Justice and Child Welfare for the Children's Defense Fund New York. Thanks again, Julia.
Thank you. This has been a great conversation.
Support for the Capitol Press Room provided by the New York State AFL-CIO, a federation of 3,000 unions fighting for working people by keeping New York State union strong. More information at unionstrongny.org. And by the New York State United Teachers, a statewide union of nearly 700,000 professionals in education and healthcare.